Everyone appears to be here. Do any council have any questions before we begin this morning? Very good. Mr. Linehan, then, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice Hetekin and members of the court. May it please the court, Dan Linehan on behalf of MBC Construction and Carolina Casualty Company. In this case, the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court considered plaintiff's motion to compel medical benefits, wherein Mr. Lewis sought an award of a $400,000 home custom built as a workers' compensation medical expense. The question before this court on appeal is whether the trial court acted in excess of its powers when it ordered the appellants to either find plaintiff an existing home to provide him or plans for the construction of a new home to be built at the appellant's expense. The Workers' Compensation Court rejected plaintiff's request for a $400,000 home, which is the issue on plaintiff's cross appeal. Appellants submit the issues raised on the cross appeal are moot because the law demands this court make a finding as a matter of law that real property is not a medical appliance under the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Act. The appellees are not asking this court to overturn the precedent of Cotrazina and Miller. To the contrary, we are asking the court to follow these cases that accessible modifications are compensable expenses under 48.120. However, appellants are asking the court to find as a matter of law, real property is not a medical expense under the act. Unlike specialized modifications for handicap accessibility, the four walls and the roof of a home and the land on which it sits serve no medical purpose. Housing is an ordinary expense of life to be paid by an injured worker from wage loss benefits. Consequently, the award of real property would result in a windfall to the appellee, which this court has held to be impermissible under the act. The meaning of the statute is a question of law, which obligates this court to make its own statutory interpretation. In making such interpretation, the court should first consider the plain, ordinary meaning of the statute and the language in the statute. Here, the court is charged with interpreting Section 48.120 of the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Act. This is the section of the act addressing medical expenses. As a threshold issue in interpreting Section 48.120, the court must determine whether a proposed appliance or supply is a medical expense. This court recognized the principle of medical relatedness in Sellers versus Reefer Systems when it stated the obvious purpose of 48.120 is to authorize the court to order as part of a final award the employer to pay the cost of medicines and medical treatment reasonably necessary to relieve the worker from the effects of the injury. In the Nebraska cases cited by both parties in their briefs, Cotrazina, Miller, Simmons, and Canis, there was a clear medical purpose for each of the appliances. In Cotrazina and Miller, home modifications were necessary for the health and safety of the injured worker. In Simmons, a wheelchair accessible van was necessary to assist with outpatient therapy and rehabilitation from the work injury. And in Canis, a penile implant was required to restore function to an injured to a part of the injured worker's body.
So are you arguing that there should be no modifications paid for at all by your client?
Thank you, Chief Justice. My client has not appealed the order of modifications. We are simply appealing the issue of whether the award of real property is appropriate under the act.
So what is the court to do when you have a injured worker that doesn't own a home?
When the injured worker does not own a home, the court can consider alternative options like was done in the North Carolina cases where the injured worker could rent an apartment and the employer would bear the cost for the increased expense associated with making that handicap accessible or having the apartment itself be handicap accessible.
Are these alternatives you presented to the Workers' Compensation Court?
Those alternatives were not presented to the Workers' Compensation Court because the plaintiff at the trial court only asked for the award of a $400,000 home. Only after the proposed appliance is determined to be a medical expense does the court make the analysis from the second part of 48.120. That test was set forth in Pearson.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. Are you aware of cases that have interpreted similar language and determined that appliances does include housing and modification and or purchasing?
Thank you, Justice Miller-Lehrman. There are cases from other jurisdictions where courts have interpreted their Workers' Compensation Act to include appliances and home modifications specifically as an appliance. And in this case, we are not disputing that that is the law in Nebraska. A modification qualifies as an appliance under Cortrezina and Miller because it serves a medical purpose.
And do you read the court's order to necessarily include that the ownership of the home to be either purchased or built necessarily belongs to the worker? Or are you aware of cases where homes have been required to be built, but the insurance company owns the home?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any cases where an appellate court has upheld a trial court's decision to award an interest in real property to an injured worker.
And the insurance company holds the mortgage. Are you aware of those cases?
I am not, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Only after proposed appliance is determined to be a medical expense does the court make the analysis from the second part of 48120. That test from Pearson, again, is that medical, surgical, or hospital services are compensable if they are reasonable, they are required by the nature of the injury, and they will relieve pain or promote and hasten an employee's return to health or employment. In awarding the medically necessary home modifications in Cotrazina, the Court of Appeals noted that 48120 had been amended to include appliances and supplies required by the nature of the injury. Cotrazina's medical complications identified by the court included his being scooter bound and requiring ramps to enter and exit his house, his inability to turn doorknobs and reach upper pantries, and his inability to use a standard shower or a standard toilet.
Counsel, I know you've answered Justice Miller-Lehrman that you're not aware of such cases, but just as a hypothetical, what would be the flaw of requiring the employer or its insurer to provide real property that's actually owned by the employer or insurer, but used by the injured worker for the period of time necessary to injury?
Thank you, Justice Castle. The problem with that hypothetical situation is that the Act does not provide for the award of real property. The court here is limited to the jurisdiction of the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court and the limitation of benefits within the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court.
Would that be an award of real property if your client maintained ownership of the property and held the deed?
It would
allow the use of the property by the injured worker?
It would not be an award of real property per se, but it would, as I'll discuss, it would allow for the injured worker to benefit from a windfall, because he would then be relieved from paying for an ordinary expense of life. And a windfall in Nebraska is not allowed to an injured worker.
So could a trial court try to parse out what the housing value would be as compared to the enhanced rental appropriate would be with respect to what's necessary to accommodate the injured worker?
I think that the court is doing the courts that have considered that in the context of renting an apartment, which is was similar to what the insurance company carrying a life estate or a long-term interest in the home has done. They have calculated and made factual determinations that the employer is responsible for the difference between a standard home and the home that would be needed to meet the medical needs of the injured worker. And in that way, the difference in cost is is a compensable expense because it is necessary as a result of the work injury, whereas the home itself is not necessary as a result of the work injury. It is an ordinary expense of life, which the court has found to be expected to be paid out of the injured worker's indemnity benefits.
Would the van be an ordinary expense of life?
The van is not an ordinary expense of life. The van is necessitated due to the work injury. A van is not something like food, shelter, and water that all individuals require. So in that way, the van is not an ordinary necessity of life. It is also personal property, whereas a home and the land that it sits on is real property that can be mortgaged and appreciate in value and can be sold and transferred. Similar to Cotrazina, here the Workers' Compensation Court made factual findings that medically necessary modifications were needed for Mr. Lewis. The appellants are not asking this court to overturn the order of these expenses. We're asking the court to follow the precedent in Cotrazina and Miller and find that medically necessary modifications are expenses under 48120. Thank you, Your
Honor. I do beg your pardon. I see you're out of time, but with the chief's permission, I'll ask a question. thank you so much. Is it assured that if a rental lived at a rental property, that the owner of the property would be agreeable to modifications to suit that worker? You get in trouble for painting your walls or dirtying the carpet. How about widening the doors and all that? Is it assured that a landlord will be happy with that?
Certainly, Your Honor. There would be a unique challenge to find a landlord who is willing to allow their property to be modified in that way. Although that landlord may be willing to work with an injured worker by signing a longer term lease and also may actually benefit from some of the improvements in the property.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Is it Mr. High?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Justin High. I'm here representing Mr. Alan Michael Lewis. I'm going to go a little out of order. One of the points is important to bring up currently. My colleague said that the issue of a rental house had not been addressed. That is inaccurate. It had been addressed. That was the first motion where the plaintiff, appellee, was trying to get accessible housing. In the record, it'd be page 7 of the transcript, exhibit 125, page 7, line 10 is where we discussed that. So the plaintiff did make a motion, and we said, Mr. Lewis is currently residing in a rental house. Please pay to make it handicap accessible. They objected, and the trial court found that's not reasonable because, as Justice Miller-Lerman just pointed out, we don't have the consent of the owner, and that's not something that we're going to address. So that's how you get to this point where the plaintiff is requesting that the court order a house be purchased or built. That's how we get there. But it's important to note that we've already been down this road and many, many other roads.
Under that motion, was there any communication with the landlord about willingness to allow these modifications?
In the record, I think you will find there was not. There had been some repair modifications done. Specifically, you'll find mentions of a stairwell with the handrail that had broken off because Mr. Lewis happens to be about 6 feet, 6 inches tall and weighs about 400 pounds. And so that was repaired with something far more substantial, but there was really no active communication with the landlord that I can represent to the court. My opponent is correct. The Workers' Compensation Act does not mention real property. It doesn't mention personal property. It doesn't mention intellectual property or property of any kind. What it does mention are appliances. And under that broad definition of appliances, we have all sorts of things. Vans, service animals, wheelchairs. In this case alone, those are all compensable. The test is not whether or not it's real property or personal property. The test is whether or not it will relieve pain or promote and hasten restoration to the health and employment of the injured employee. And that's what we have here.
Are you contending that the responsibility of the employer or its insurer under this order is to actually build or buy a house and transfer ownership of it to the worker?
Absolutely not. It never has been. That is not what we intended. What we did do was come up with a solution and one that frankly I thought was the cheapest option. If you look at buying a house and then modifying it and making all of the doorways 36 inches wide, redoing the entire bathroom so it's a zero entry, reinforcing everything, that there's a 10-point list in a report from the plaintiff's treating physician, the appellee's treating physician, excuse me, which details everything that needs to be done. When we handed this to our expert witness, the expert witness said this is impossible.
So do you think the trial court's order can be read to so reflect that principle that the insurer would be required to turn over ownership worker?
No, I do not think the trial court's order requires that the deed be in the name of the employee.
Do you think that the Workers' Compensation Act requires either an or its insurer to become a landlord?
Do I think it requires that?
Yes.
In if it is necessary to do those things in order to provide a medical appliance that is reasonable, necessary, causally related, and will relieve pain and promote and hasten restoration to health, then yes, I do.
Are you aware of cases, I beg your pardon, are you aware of cases in which housing was ordered for the injured worker, and with respect to housing, the ordinary expenses of the housing are allocated amongst or between the owner, the worker, the employer, and the insurance company, such that, for example, the employee pays the taxes, the employee pays the repairs, but nevertheless, ownership, the hereditary amounts of ownership are assigned to the employer and the insurance company.
To answer your question, Justice Miller-Lerman, am I personally aware? My opponent pointed out a case from North Carolina, and I believe the holding of that case did exactly what you're mentioning. It allocated some of the expenses to the employee and some of the expenses to the employer. But also in that case, the court said there may be instances where the entire cost of the home should be borne by the workers' compensation insurer and employer.
Thank you.
Should your client have any responsibility for paying for his own housing or a portion of that housing?
The answer to that question, I believe, yes. This is not an instance where somebody is trying to win the lottery. We simply want a place for him to live that isn't dangerous.
Your opposing counsel makes the argument that it's a windfall under this scenario. If your client was required to pay for a fair market value of a reasonable house and the additional cost would be borne by the employer, is that reasonable?
I don't think it is in this particular instance, because the cost of modifying any house he might buy far outweighs the benefit of him actually getting and purchasing a house. In addition, I don't think that's even possible.
What share of the indemnity benefits should be backed out under your scenario then?
Can you, I'm
if an employee is given housing under your scenario, how do you avoid double dipping in the indemnity benefits?
I don't think you do, because it's a medical appliance. So I don't think there's precedent to allow for a reduction in indemnity benefits to pay for a medical appliance.
What's the purpose of indemnity benefits?
To replace the injured worker's income because of their loss of ability to earn.
Comes in. Included in paying for the necessities of life?
It is.
So isn't housing a necessity of life?
It is.
So if they're not having to pay for the necessities of life and housing, are they entitled to the total indemnity benefits?
I think they are. And the reason that I come to that conclusion is because we've never, and I'm not aware of any cases where we've set off any indemnity benefits because of some other medical benefit that an injured worker is getting. I understand.
I beg your pardon. Are you aware of cases in which the logic is now that an award, for example, of a wheelchair is made to an employee, and the logic of the court is, and therefore, now that the employee is wheelchair-bound, the court will also award money or housing so that you can actually, that is adapted or accessible as a consequence of having awarded the wheelchair to the wheelchair-bound employee.
Your question was, am I aware of cases where somebody is awarded a wheelchair and then awarded accessible housing?
Yes, as a, so they can use the wheelchair.
Absolutely. Code of Zerna, Simmons, cases from other jurisdictions. What we're struggling with here is the fact that unlike Code of Zerna and unlike Simmons, my client didn't own his own house. He doesn't own the property. He can't just come and say, please modify this for me. Thank you very much. It's another bit of a conundrum. But considering the benefit and purpose of the act, I think you err on the side of giving the employee something that's going to be a safe place for him to live.
Is there some prohibition against him owning his own house, purchasing his house?
There's no legal prohibition, no. But his indemnity benefits are $300 a week, and he has four children.
So it's a financial issue.
It's completely 100% financial, yes.
I think answer the question earlier and said that you don't read the order from the workers' compensation court to mean that client would get real property, that real property would be put in your client's name. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
So how do you read that? Oh, what would the situation be if housing is provided?
I read that order the same way I read many orders from this particular court. They will tell us what they want us to do. The manner in which we do it is up to us. The judges of this court, they don't want to micromanage the lawyers. They don't want to micromanage the parties. They trust us to come up with a solution. And I believe that that would be very easy to do once we get past what we're doing here today. One final point, I'd say I'm out of time. One final point, I understand the struggle here. The struggle is, why is it that we're giving this person an entire house and they get all the benefit of not having to pay for housing? Well, because when it's a necessary medical appliance, there are ancillary benefits that come with it. When you get a handicap accessible van, well, you don't have to buy a car. When in this particular case, my client was awarded a service dog, so he doesn't have to buy another pet. It's I'm not going to call it a necessary evil, but it's an ancillary benefit that is worth doing because the health and safety of the employee should be paramount and is under the act.
And all of that depends on the meaning of the word appliance, right?
It does.
What definition would you propose of the word?
Anything that relieves pain or promotes and hastens restoration to health.
But doesn't that just totally read the word appliance out of the statute, because the following phrase says required by the nature of the injury to relieve pain. So aren't what you are arguing for is that literally anything that is required by the nature of the injury to relieve pain and promote and hasten the employee's restoration is on the table?
It has to meet all of the prerequisites. It has to be reasonable. It has to be necessary, it has to be causally related.
But your definition of appliance just mirrors the second part of the statute.
I don't think so, because another thing that must be done is a physician has to say it's reasonable, necessary, and causally related. And the court is more than capable of determining whether something is reasonable. And in this instance, the facts, the court found on the facts of this case that it absolutely was. Are there any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments in Lewis versus MBC Construction Company, Inc. You are excused.